everybody. Welcome to Three Fat Truckers. We're your hosts. I'm Bill. Joining me, as always, are my two fantastic co-hosts, Dave and Steve. How's it going, Steve?
Well, you're supposed to go to Dave, man. I was ready.
It normally would have, but
I'm doing great. How's everybody out there in Radio Land?
Good morning, everybody. It's Tuesday afternoon.
I'm doing good, Bill. Good day, everybody. Enjoy the show. We got some special guests on this episode.
We do. We're joined here by Travis Egrich, Sr. He is the president at Global Energy Research and Development Incorporated. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. Also joining us are his two sons, Thomas and Taylor. How's it going, fellas?
Doing good, sir. Good. How are you?
Right on. Welcome Thanks to Three Fat Truckers. Now, we do have Dave in the stream right here, and this is going to have to be, if you want to get the full value out of this episode, folks, you're going to have to go to the YouTube, because that's the only way you're going to get anything out of Dave. Dave is the quintessential Generation X 80s child that was better seen and not heard, and we're just going to see what one of these episodes sounds like without his voice on it. I reckon it'll take about 10 minutes from start to finish.
I don't know. He'll be pushing buttons trying to get it to work, I bet you. God,
we're going to fuck with him so hard. It's going to be so hard.
Well, fellas, we met Travis last year, first time, now at Louisville at the Matt Show. Speaking of the Matt Show, when is that this year, Bill?
The Mid-America Trucking Show is March 21st, 22nd, 23rd at the
Louisville Convention Center.
Yeah, Louisville Convention Center. Did I say it right? Is it Louisville or Louisville?
Louisville. It's always Louisville.
Louisville. Okay.
That's the way they all say it down here. It's they say some other towns sort of weird too.
Be there.
When you read it, it should be Louisville, right?
I bet there ain't a single person down there that says Louisville.
They look at you and say, "Yankee, go home."
How you must not be from around here talking like that.
But anyway, at the truck show last year, our neighbor, our booth right next door to us was Mr. Travis here, and he had a pretty awesome product. We interviewed him. He was our first interview last year, and we had some technical difficulties and was never able to get the interview out there, so we're really glad to have you back. I know it's almost been a year, but we'd have caught you at the next show, I'm sure.
We appreciate it. We had fun.
Oh, I
laughed so much.
You had the scooter. I didn't rent one of them. I'm going to bring my own this year, though.
That's the way to do it.
It was a fantastic conversation. I remember. And I just also remember being so nervous that whole time, because I was so scared of it being... Yeah, well, I mean, that was the first interview we had ever done, and I was not aware. We didn't take any time to test the equipment as well as we should have, full disclosure.
Yeah.
We are light years ahead of...
No, don't say that.
...of all of that. Now, I can say that we're ahead of that, because that was setting the bar awfully low.
Yeah.
But,
that conversation that we had it, you should have been there, right?
It was fantastic.
Live, because it was a great conversation. We had fun. I know I laughed a lot. You guys I don't know. You guys are.
That was back when there was three of us.
We're different. We're different.
Yeah. Oh, that is that the word we use?
The one that's always chatty is sort of quiet. So, and I know it's driving him nuts not to be able to talk in. He's going to get pen and paper and
he's going to keep
write
trying.
It down and hold it
Might
up.
Might as well keep trying, Dave.
There you go. That's what I'd have done in the first place. So, Travis, while we're here, you know, everybody out here takes watches and stuff here, because we got so many millions and millions of viewers. But, you know, we're up here on the 83rd floor of the, what building is this, Bill?
This is, we're on the 13th tier of the 80,000 square foot.
There we go.
Studio, recording studio, yeah.
Go
ahead, recording in front of a live studio audience.
if you feel like it or if you're up to it there, give us a rundown on what your company does and like the product that you was promoting there at the truck show.
You're going to have to call him.
What the hell was that? You got a dog?
The bear.
He's kind of like a...
I thought... Dave. Come here. I'm like, what the hell is he? Because he's got a board that he can push weird shit on.
Yeah, he does.
Throw that dog.
And thank God for that.
Oh, man, that's too much.
Go ahead, Travis.
No, the boys work with me. Now, if there's one that's not here, but the boys work with me. We've had a chemical company or fuel additive company for the last 30 some years that I've had, and I've been in the industry for all that period of time. And like we'd spoke at Mid-America about how I got into the chemical or into the additive industry was through my father. And my father was a trucker. A number of my family is in the trucking industry. And back in the early 70s, he gelled out there western Minnesota, eastern North Dakota in the winter. And anyways, he lost he just about froze to death. He just about killed him. And in doing so, years later, it kind of drew my interest when I went to work for an analytical group and a chemical company that they put me in charge of cold weather fuels. And I said, I'll take it. I get to go back home once a year, January 15th to February 15th in northern Minnesota. Just fantastic time. and I tested fuel. It was a great time. But the thing that I was doing is I was learning about the operability of these fuels. And in doing so, that led us into manufacturing and then also continuing on to look at the different parameters of needs for fuel. And it's grown over the years. So the boys have all taken part. And it's been kind of a personal push through this whole campaign. I've got to a point now that the boys do a lot more than what I do anymore. But at the same time, it's been quite a journey. It really has. I've made a lot of good friends. I'm sitting here, I was talking to a customer just a couple days ago. He's been a customer for 30 years, I got to give thanks for the idea that he just took the time to even still, do business with us. But at the same thing, it's relationships you build, friendships you build. It's been quite a journey. But the boys are taking it to the next level, and they've got into the marketing aspect. Now, theirs are been our biggest problem is marketing. We've gone through designing and failures. I mean, if you're looking at one of the biggest failures you'll ever meet. I know how to screw stuff up so much. But you try, and you get frustrated, and you try, and then when you've given up, and you just say, there's nothing going to work for this stuff. Somehow something comes together and it works. And, like Mid-America has been a benefit to us too when we were over there, because that brought different companies to us. In fact, some of the General Motor reps came and seen us there, and that's how we picked up GM. We do some stuff with the Department of Defense it's been a lot of fun. I mean, there's been times that you get frustrated and things, but overall, it's been interesting. And it's beneficial to the truck driver. And it's beneficial to the consumer if they want to learn. And the boys can teach and educate and supply information to different groups if they want to pick up on really the operability issues of fuel today. And I'd say if I sit 1,000 men in a room and they are consumers of fuel, millions and millions of gallons of material, I don't think I'd have one or two that even understand what the basic concepts of the fuel are. It's sad. And it's such an expensive, you know, it's crazy. It's just,
well, you think drivers that use the fuel and stuff, they'd be a little privy on what it has to have to not break down, what causes it to break down. Their main concern is wintertime, far as the gelling and stuff of the fuels and adding bio and everything else that they're mixing in with the fuels nowadays. That's changed over the last, you're saying 30 years, one customer, you know, what that customer was using then to what you're getting now is night and day.
You look at the chemicals that we supply, the first formulations we have are no longer sold. And you look at a lot of the materials that are sold in the stores and things, that's the same material they came out with 40 years ago, 50 years ago. Yep. And fuels evolve. So you've got to evolve your formulation along with it.
And well, I can remember, remember my mom's 74, supposedly still driving. She's late, she's off right now. But I can remember back in the day when she was, I don't know, they drove. She had a couple of different truck driver husbands. I can remember back in the day in Fort Wayne, Indiana, them taking the old turkey pan and the charcoal and putting it underneath the truck in the truck stop just to get the thing to start, you know, warmed up enough and everything during the wintertime. And that's Indiana. Indiana didn't get cold like as cold as it did up Minnesota, North Dakota, you know, the farther you get. And back then, the fuel, I mean, I don't know if it gelled faster then than it does now.
Well, you say that, and you remind me of my, was one of the things my father told me. He said, back in the day, when fuel gelled in the 60s and the 70s and things like that, you could tell when your truck was going to gel going down the road. And he says, how you could tell is you looked at the fuel or the stack, and it would be white smoking. And you'd see it going back along the trailer, and then it would drop down. So if you had a reefer trailer or box, you'd see it coming out of the stack. It'd go along the trailer a little bit, and then it would drop maybe a couple panels back, and it would go down to the ground. And he said, as the colder it got and the closer it got to gelling, the smoke would go along the top of the trailer further and further back. He said, when you seen the smoke, the white smoke, going all the way to the back of the trailer and then dropping off the back of the trailer, you needed to get off the road right away. That was his indicator. And he said, when it switched over to low sulfur fuel in October of 1993, that changed. The fuel would lock up. You know, when I was doing cold weather testing, I seen what he said prior to that. You'd see the fuel would start to gel gradually, and then it would eventually lock up through the filtration system. Well, now you'll do a pull, and that fuel will be operating at, say, 6 below 0 6 below zero, it'll be flowing through the filtration system. And then at eight, it just locks up. It don't go gradual or anything. It just locks up. So that's a safety concern. I mean, that's a safety concern. And we were talking earlier about back in, when was it, boys, when we were working with Willie in the 90s? Is that when
it was it was in the 2000s. I'd say it was probably around 05 or so
we got with Willie Nelson. And we were talking, he had us come out and they did a thing over at Carl's Corner, and it was a big promotion aspect to get biofuel on the charts. And they were using Mr. Nelson for a front man, and a guy named Peter Bell and Jason Hoare were trying to get, our country to mandate biofuel. It hadn't happened yet. Well, Minnesota picked up on it. Of all places to pick up on using biofuel, Minnesota had to end up being the place. Now, where's the logic in that? But then we're talking about government, so that the logic is there in government thought. So they take Minnesota and they mandate the requirement of a low percentage of biofuel. And, I kept trying to say, hey, this ain't going to work. Well, I lost my involvement with this group because I wasn't a team player. because I said, you know, if you're going to supply biofuel, let's give the pros and the cons. And they wanted only to put the pros out there, promote the pros. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, Willie Nelson or anything. Willie was just, he's wanting to help the farmer. That was his whole aspect to it. It wasn't to, right, to do anything else. And the end result was they put this bio out, and it locked up Minnesota. I mean, within the first, it just shut them guys down. They had to pull it off. And I had said they're not extracting the glycerin. They're not doing this. They're not doing that. They're trying to make moonshine too quick is what they were trying to do. You know, it's just yeah, simple. It wasn't no rocket science to this. It was just, that was the way it was. And they got on me about who do I think I was. And I'm nobody. I'm just, you know, a young guy trying to study this. And so what they did is they backed up, slowed down the process, started extract the glycerin properly. But still, that stuff separates in your fuel. And then you have different types of bio. You have soybean, rapeseed oil. You have animal tallow. Animal tallow, animal fat. So what we're doing is we're taking animal fat, we're putting it into our fuel, and we're expecting the equipment to run on the fuel. Now, down in Florida, I started to get telephone calls in the winter. The number one place, I don't know, was it 3 years ago, something like that, the number one gelling location in the nation was Florida. It wasn't Minnesota. And the reason is they were unloading the animal tallow onto the market like crazy with rot gut fuel. And these guys are picking up this fuel and they're, you know, FedEx?
Lacy Crew.
No, FedEx was using it and that kind of stuff. So they're getting this animal tallow. They're trying to sell it to their truck drivers or supply them with a cut. They're not trying to do this deliberately. But the fuel industry is dumping this animal tallow in the southern parts of the United States because they can't sell it up north, and it rots. It's just like a cake. When you make this stuff, as soon as you finish making it, it rots out. It's the freshest time is when you take it out of the oven and you use it right then. If you store it, it starts to deteriorate. So you got all these farmers that are supporting it the whole nine yards, and so be it, because they're trying to, you know, it's a agricultural
farm byproduct
deal, and doggone it, we need to support the farmer, and I'm all for all that stuff, but we need to kind of keep our head out of our fourth point of contact when we do it, because the situation is the stuff deteriorates, then it actually affects the other fuel and it starts to rot. So the long-term effect is we have a nationally contaminated system of rot gut fuel, and these guys are out here trying to make a living driving truck, and they're getting poor quality grade fuel right at the pump. That's why the chemicals are so important. And, you know, maybe the boys could share a little bit more if you have questions and things like that. But the fact of the matter is, back in prior to October of 1993, if you said, well, I don't use the fuel additive, I don't need to. And there's a difference between an additive and an effective additive. But the thing is, prior to October of 1993, 1992 area and stuff like that, you could get away with it to a certain degree. But now it's dry. The fuel is so doggone dry, it just eats the liners out. I used to give classes at some of the Cummins and different groups that had Cummins engines and different, you know, just depending on the place. I'd say, well, we're seeing in-frames done on these because they're just having problems with the EGR and this and this and this. And I'm trying to take it easy on these guys because it's their equipment. It's their engines. They're working for the manufacturer. And I'm having these mechanics raise their hand like little guys. Excuse me, sir. You say, I'm telling them they're doing in-frame. Some of them are doing as early as 400,000 miles, things like that. And they're turning around and saying, sir, we're doing them at 250,000. You know, and I'm going, how do you do that when in 1970, you could plan on taking a 3406 You know, you could take even an 8V92 two-cycle engine and run it down the road and get 100,000 miles, or excuse me, a million miles out of it. At 900,000 miles, you're taking an 8V or a 3406, and you're going, who's going to be doing the in-frame for me when I hit a million miles? And you could even continue on, but that was your maintenance threshold before you stopped, freshened up the engine, and did that. Can you imagine we've progressed to having even more perfected fuel delivery systems, better burning, cleaner types of combustion we're putting out there, all this emissions aspect, and we have engines that are going down at 400,000 or 500,000 miles? It's not acceptable. It's just going completely in reverse. And you can fix that by preventive maintenance and proper maintenance, but
Is some of that, you think, due to like cost cutting in the refinement process and just cheaper raw materials?
Put metal conditioner in.
There's Dave.
Oh. Yeah,
hi Dave.
Hi guys.
Welcome. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful.
Welcome to Three Fat Truckers, Dave. It's good to see you.
Good to hear you. Yes, sir.
I've been hearing you guys, so I'm up to what you're going. But do they still put metal conditioner in the fuel like they used to?
Metal conditioner?
Yes.
What kind of metal conditioner? What do you mean?
Like back in the day, we used a lot of it in racing under Tri-Pex or...
you're talking about more of a lubricity package, right? Is that what you're right. asking me about?
Right. Well, that's... But I heard they were putting it in fuel, too, to try getting the mileage up.
No, here we've really run into a crossroads here with the fuel industry, and it's I mean this is really if there's something that I could share that'd be the most important thing I could say is that the consumers of fuel need to truly open up their eyes and really get proactive and understand what they're buying. I mean, these large truck fleets, I go into, I've spent time with large truck fleets. They're clueless, using tens of millions of gallons of fuel a month, and they have no idea. And the fuel jobbers and the fuel suppliers, they're trying to supply whatever is the standard, whatever the ASTM standard is, that's what they're going to do, and that's what they're required to do. If you go and you start pumping quality material through and you're got an industry or a market that's only looking at the cheapest fuel I can buy, you can't put the proper chemicals in there because they're going to cost something. You're going to lower your profit margin. You lower your profit margin to your stockholders and things like that. You got a problem. But the fact of the matter is we got to step up. We've got to change a lot of different things in this country. One of the things we got to do is we got to step up and pay attention to what we are consuming in regards to these fuels. Now, their idea, the green aspect of it is just quit burning fuel. Well, it's not going to happen. It's mathematical. Okay. First of all, everything is mathematical. If you can't, you don't even start something without doing math. But the idea that we're going to keep making a poor quality fuel or allowing a lower quality fuel out there, what we're doing is we're actually hurting equipment and the end user to where he has to take and buy more parts, repair things more. So what's that? That's using materials and items that we wouldn't have to do if we had an efficient burning fuel industry. So you're having to add more and more material to it to make it an effective combustion. Lubricity is what you were talking about. If you don't have lubricity, you're just gonna dry screw out your liners. I mean, just think about it. I have people come up to you. Well, Travis, I got 1,500,000 miles in my truck, and I haven't had to do a thing to it. When I listen to them a little while, and then it starts getting into, I find out this, I find out that. Mm. But you got to remember, you've run 1,500,000 miles, but you've lost a half a mile or three quarters of a mile to a gallon in its performance over that period of time, and you take that and calculate that into the lost performance of that equipment, and you could have bought yourself a house with the fuel you've lost, with the fuel that you've consumed extra. Mm-hmm. It's just something that we've got to focus on and pay a little bit more attention to. And the gimmick is the additive industry. And I've sat in these boardrooms back years ago, many years ago, and I've had these cowboys walk in and sit down at the board table. And I'm one of the guys in the panel that are sitting off to the side, and they want to make an additive. We're going to make an additive. We're going to make the best additive in the world. And they come in and they find out what it's going to cost to make that material. And then they say, oh, well, shoot, bean counter sitting in there. You got to have your bean counter at those meetings. The bean counter, what if we cut it back 90%? The effective dosage, 90%, and put filler in there. And then what we'll do is we'll spend that money that we were going to spend on marketing. Now, these guys are smart. Now, I'm not saying they're stupid. I'm saying the dumb one you're looking at right now. Because what they did is they figured out, we come back and we cut it back, and we cut it all the way back to being nothing but watered down 3.2. And what the end result turns out to be is what we're going to do is we're going to come back in 2 or 3 years at and put our money in marketing. And when everybody starts to know about the product, what we're going to do is we're going to make it better. We're going to come out and say, hey, it's new and improved. Well, yeah. How could it be new and improved? There's no such thing. So the point I'm trying to say, they come out and they say that, but 2 years go by, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. If the marketing is done properly, they don't have to improve it. And that's what we have available on the majority of the market today. I'd say if you was to look at the true chemical stimulating industry, 95% of the additive industry is ineffective.
Are we just not refining fuel good enough to what we need just to try making it cleaner? That's
yes.
What we're doing.
It's one of the reasons. That's one of the reasons. Also, it depends on the base crude. See, you start with the crude. Like when you take, you know, probably one of the poor fuels for cold weather operability is the stuff that comes from Valdez or comes from, you know, Alaska. That's why they send so much of it to China. Most of that fuel go, or not China, I apologize, to Japan. That's where it used to go. What they do with it now, I don't know, but the majority of it would go to Japan. But when I was working on some Chinese fuel up in northern China, I was looking at that, and boy, they were having problems with gelling and this issue and that issue. I was looking at it, and everybody said, oh, it's a terrible fuel. It's a terrible fuel. Well, it was a terrible fuel for cold weather operability. But the material, because it had so much paraffin in it, which what is paraffin? Paraffin is the energy of the fuel. Since it has energy, it's a good fuel. It's just not a good fuel for cold weather operability.
Is that why they say Saudi Arabia's fuel is a cleaner fuel or a better refined fuel?
I can't answer that because I don't. By the time I see some of these fuels, I can't give you an answer to all of it. Different fuels, different refineries, different hydrocracking processes, different management of how they're going to crack that fuel. That takes place, and then when they start pumping it through the pipeline terminal. The other thing that they've started to allow many years ago now, this has probably been 50. Oh man, time goes by, you know?
It sucks.
I know. No, 30 years ago in the 90s, you know that.
That's why I go fishing. That's why I'm going fishing. I don't anymore. But the thing was, back in the 90s, early 90s, we would get a couple calls a year on microbial issue. Okay, a couple a year. Now, take today, and that's the majority of the calls every day.
Okay, yes, sir.
So microbial, where does the microbial come from? Now, the microbial comes from primarily the idea that the Department of Agriculture And I know some good guys over there, but I know some other ones too. But the idea of the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Agriculture is actually, they get their marching orders from the majors, you know, your fuel majors. And they're usually on most of the panels, and they're closed door panels, things like that. They won't let me in anymore. So I'm the bastard. So not a team player. So the thing is, what they do is they give an allowance by through ASTM, through the Department of Agriculture at ASTM and Weights and Measures, that they allow more water in fuel. And then when you have biofuel added to fuel, they even allow more water at the ASTM standard, because if they had to extract the water, it'd be a nightmare to extract all the water out of the bio. So now you have a huge amount of water in our fuel. Now it's minute in basically, if you think about it, but there's still water in there. What does water have? Water has oxygen. And what does a living microorganism need to survive? Needs oxygen. So here you got this bug. It's just a floating around in there, and its food is the paraffin of the diesel. It eats the wax. It eats the paraffin, the energy of your fuel. Now, it's not killing the fuel all down. Don't let me draw a picture like that. But what it does is it eats the paraffin, and then its byproduct, guess what this byproduct is? Water. Now, if you've ever seen them have
they're pissing in the fuel, huh?
There you go. So
pretty much.
And then they split.
Damn, bugs pissing in my fuel.
And so if you look at oil spills like they had off the coast, what do they use? They use a microbial. They dump it on the oil, and it eats the oil, and then it puts fresh water. Well, look back there in the bayous and stuff like that. They were having problems with so much fresh water coming off of the fuel that it was causing that was causing more problems than the oil was. Okay.
That all makes sense. I mean, answer the big question that everybody bitches about constantly is, diesel fuel is made by refining gasoline, correct?
Well, the it's supposed, it's a byproduct. It's like so many things are a byproduct of the crude.
Right. Okay. And they say, well, we're refining gas. Why is diesel fuel so expensive if they get it from refining gas?
Well, it's... You know, I don't see what the expense is a whole other discussion.
Well, gas is a byproduct of the, like, lamp oil that so, like, J.D. Rockefeller, when they were doing Rockefeller oil.
Right.
His byproduct was the gasoline and everything like that. So it depending on the certain temperature of that you refine crude at determines whether it'll come out as propane during the different processes and everything like that.
It depends on the flash point of all of them, too, to how, what grade you're going to get.
Right.
Yeah.
So the problem, and I need to back off and let the boys talk a little bit more here too, is that you have fuel that has so much water, microbial. And I talked to a gentleman that was appointed by the Department of Agriculture to be the head of alternative fuels and regulating premium fuels and things like that. And, I talked to him one day, and he says, Travis, the whole pipeline system is contaminated with material. He says, I said, well, why don't they use a biocide or something like that? He says, well, we'd have to biocide it. He says, well, it'd just be a nightmare. We'd have to do it a couple times a year and things like that. And so the point of all this is that all this contamination is eventually making its way through the system and ends up in your fuel tank. And so how do they eliminate it? Your filtration system is what eliminates it. You buy the filtration system for the fuel industry to filter out the material or have it clog up your filter in situations where your operability turns out to be sitting on the side of the road, poor performance, the thing's dragging its rear end. It's regenerating multiple times where it doesn't need to. Why don't we back up a little bit? Why don't we make a quality fuel with the right additive package in it, have it burn complete in the combustion chamber, and have less emissions coming out so we don't have to go into the regen. Common sense. It's a process that you know, we've lost in somewhere in over the last period of years. So
you make no money that way.
Well, and then also you got to look at the idea that they don't care if you have bad fuel today. I don't believe it at the government at the highest government level, because if you've got problems with your fuel, maybe you'll look at EV or something EVs. Like that.
Yeah.
That's all mathematically impossible. I mean,
I wanted to get a chance to get your take on that, because I can hear the more, shall we say, progressive people that I talk to screaming into their video players right now. Well, what about EV? Is it that here to rescue us from the evils of the fossil fuel burning? And isn't that just as effective as a option? What is your take on that? I'd like to hear all three of you.
Where does all the raw materials for the batteries come? Where's your lithium come? Where's that mined from? Who mines the lithium and the cobalt?
And where do those have to be sent
to get refined to be even put into batteries? They got to be sent halfway across the world just to get refined. Then they got to come halfway across here just to get turned into batteries. Then they got to get sent all the way down to the car manufacturer to get even be put in the cars.
And uses fresh water.
Yeah, wait a second. Let me throw this in, then you guys can debate this. EV, there's nothing wrong with EV. I don't have a problem with it coming out with EV. You know where EV is going to come into play? When they put it on one of those rockets over at Cape Canaveral and they send that car over to Mars, or they do whatever, because they don't have the ability to have fuel on that particular area. So they have to use the cells to be able to be bring in the energy and things like that. But when I was in, for example, Alaska, and I'd go up there, you'll see places where there's, for example, a windmill out in the middle of nowhere. There's no power lines. There were no power lines for 150 miles. So that makes more sense. You can't run a power cord 150 miles. So you're going to use some other alternative energy. Is mathematically, here again, it's the math part. Simple math, no rocket science. It's the math that you take and you apply it to using that. I can make this amount of energy for this cost so that I can sustain what I need to at this X location. However, if you're talking about putting a windmill next to a power dam at Kentucky Lake, you're an idiot.
We have a running joke going, because you know they're building that new battery plant down there in Tennessee, or it's in Kentucky, right there.
I think it's in Tennessee.
Is it in Tennessee?
Plant used to be.
Yes, the new one they're building. New
big old place.
Where's it by?
It's right there off of 65, right after you. It's probably about 55 miles south of Louisville. Right there.
That is Kentucky.
Before you get to Bowling Green. And it's funny because we keep calling it Kentucky's next. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're calling it Kentucky's next
flea market. That's going to be their next flea market. It's going to be the
largest flea market.
that whole thing is going to crash and burn.
And by the way, if you're going to send a battery car to the moon, how are you going to get that on through the luggage, because they check your luggage. They won't let you put them batteries in your luggage now. You know.
Well,
is that a carry-on or what?
And these two guys haul a lot for a company, recycling company, Omnisource. And you talk to a couple of the big wigs at Omnisource, and they recycle I don't know how many cars a year, scrap. And they turn that metal into something else. And one of the guys was saying, with all these new electric cars, it's going to cost them, the person that owns it won't be getting paid for the car. They'll be paying to scrap the car because it costs so much to recycle those batteries.
Yeah, to take the battery out.
Yeah. And he goes, it's pretty much you're going to see them just abandoning them on the back of a side road when they do finally take a crap.
And my oldest boy made a comment not long ago, and I thought it pretty much sums it up. Electric vehicles did not come along to rescue the environment. They came along to rescue the auto industry in a time when everybody started to take the environment seriously. because it's not even a half measure, is it? It's a show of force, you know, in a world where you know that there's very little understanding, and when there's less understanding of how these things work, then you can take advantage of that lack of knowledge.
The electric vehicle will work wonderful for the suburban person that drives 15 minutes into work, 15 minutes back home, has the charger built into their house, plugs their car in. That's not the car you're going to take if you're going cross country to do sightseeing when you don't know where you're going. There's places through the cold weather, which they found out in Chicago and Detroit.
Well, there was a picture going around on TikTok there where it had a whole EV charging station, all the little arms and the contraptions that everything where you pull up to it, and it was completely underwater.
Yeah. The one it gets me is,
see? What are you going to do there?
You don't charge your car.
You see every apartment with them orange extension cords out the window down to their car so they plug it in.
Let me ask you, what do you do for an infrastructure that is in a situation where, for example, you have peak hours where they have to shut the juice down to your area?
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to California.
How would that work up there in Minnesota in the middle of winter when people have to have their heat shut off because they have to have an alternative? Have their electricity, you know, to their heating system is shut down while they use an alternative like a wood stove or another form of heat. And they can't keep the amount of electrical energy there to support that. They're going to now tell you that you're going to be using these cars. I'm not against it. I wish I did, you know.
They've got a lot of bugs to work out.
It's impossible. Now, I'm going to get in trouble here because I'm going to say stuff. So here's
welcome
the deal.
To my world.
TMC.
You've come to the right place.
The Technical Maintenance Council, they had, and in fact, I was a member of TMC, and I told the boys, don't sign me up anymore.
I thought you said TMZ. I'm like, have they been taking pictures of you?
Technical Maintenance.
Okay. So what ends up doing is the Technical Maintenance Council, they support, they got a lot of brains in there and everything. They got some good people, some great people that are part of that group. But I sat there to listen to a presentation in reference to trying to kind of plant the seed that we need to go to this alternative energy. And then, again, I don't have a problem with it if it's mathematically feasible. But what the situation was, they're all talking about how they're receiving grants, being subsidized, and things like that to do it. And then they're talking to a man out here in the audience that has a large truck company or a large truck fleet and everything. And what he's asking them to do, they're asking him to go and invest into it with his own money, his own profits and the stuff that he has, so that therefore he has to keep a enough of a fleet to support, to do the job he needs, but he's going to buy this alternative energy fleet to make it a parking part of his fleet. But if it goes down, he has to have the equipment to back it up. So mathematically, it's impossible to do it properly. Two, it also puts you in a situation where you're investing money into something that is not going to bring you a return in profits because it's your money. It's not subsidized. It's not a grant from the government. But these suits that are sitting up there on the board that are promoting it, don't mathematically show me the math. If you want me to support it, I will be happy to support anything that you can show me the math. And it's math.
Yeah.
But they don't have it.
They don't have the math yet.
And then they tell you, before you go, they're trying to get these guys to run to start build or to buy into this, but their local area doesn't have the infrastructure to support it if they do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, they say factories to put these trucks in here will take more power than the whole town takes just to try charging a fleet.
But you know where it all started? Biofuel. Because Peter Bell, Jason Hoare convinced Willie Nelson to support this program. Peter Bell came from South Africa, and he had this great smooth talking presentation. He loaded his pockets up. And he convinced Willie, And then what the end result was is I don't even know what happened to those two guys, where they went. But they convinced our federal, they stirred the pot, convinced our federal government to mandate biofuel. Why do we, if you want to mandate biofuel, put rot gut soybeans that can't be used, or you can't use it for any other reason, use it for a power generation facility, a power plant or something like that in your local area. Don't put it in our trucking industry. That's sabotage.
That's your lifeline. You're vitalizing your lifeline.
I've talked to COVID.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to touch on was the fact of like the EGR and the DPF system and the regeneration cycles that a lot of drivers are facing right now, which, you know, you're using diesel for heat for that burn off rather than mileage, you know, and you're having to sit there and wait. So you're behind time on getting loads, because a lot of owner operators rely on their standard or their view for when they go ahead and gain loads. If they're an owner operator, they got to maintain that reliability with that dispatch, right? Because it's getting to be a hard market. But
yeah, the market's flooded right now. So
right. So you have this EGR unit on trucks now, and for the EGR, it's exhaust gas recirculation. So what it does is it takes already burnt exhaust from the combustion, recirculates it through the intake, and removes fresh air from the intake for that is used for combustion, and replaces it with already, you know, dirty combustion air. So what that does is it takes that combustion and recirculates it back into the combustion chamber. So your soot goes right back in there. I have an EGR that I took off. I recently did a full overhaul on an OM617, the turbo diesels out of the old 85 Mercedes. I went ahead and rebuilt one of those, and it had about 325,000 miles on it. And just by looking at the EGR, and it's just on that type of engine, it's a very simplified version of it. And where that EGR lets about 30% of that exhaust or that diesel particulate to recycle through the combustion. And what that does is that contamination goes right back on your cylinder walls, goes right back onto the top of your piston if it doesn't get burnt off all the way. So what you have is you have a buildup of contamination on your cylinder walls that your rings then slide over and have to scrape off. And then over the time of using that engine without a preventative maintenance product, you slowly start to remove the cylinder wall thickness as well as your ring thickness, or the ring gap. And so what that, or your ring gap actually expands because the pressure of your rings go against the cylinder wall is what makes that tight fit. And overall, when your rings start to wear out, you create that blow by, and your engine might still be running and everything. It might still run, but you're not going to have your factory setting anymore. When that diesel particulate or that soot builds up on the top of your piston, your compression ratio starts to change. You know, you gotta run a detergent to get that out, but to have that diesel particulate or that contamination to then go by your ring, slide out, and get into your oil, that's when you start having that full mechanical failure, where you can go ahead and start clogging up your ports to your bearings, and so it'll starve your bearings of your oil if you have excessive blow by. You might change your oil and run a couple thousand miles down the road, but if you have excessive blow by, it only takes a little bit of that contamination to get past your rings. But
the carbon.
If you don't have a clean EGR, you can have a large chunk of material of soot that's in that EGR path that can then break loose and go right into your combustion chamber.
But an EGR puts the fuel back into the exhaust. Wouldn't it burn cleaner if you just put more fresh air in it, not exhaust air in it? Wouldn't the whole vehicle burn cleaner?
Most because definitely.
All you're
would.
Doing is you're using an old product that has already been burnt right back into the same thing. Mm-hmm. You're not saving nothing. You're just robbing from the performance of the clean air what it does.
Yes, right. And it is a great thing though, the after treatment systems today. We're like with the NOx, it's reduced it down to basically nothing. So they've made some really great leaps on putting less emissions in the air, so we can be happy about that. But the amount of issues that it causes the end user, the owner operator, the small time truck driver is, you know, it's a headache, and it causes a lot of issues for them. And they don't actually know, you know, the different ways of actually treating the fuels to lower those maintenance and downtime issues that come along with the after treatment system. Because there's very simple ways of treating your fuel to keep those types of problems from occurring and keeping your downtime to a minimum.
But but that information wasn't necessarily brought forth to the market, I would say. So when they say, "Hey, we're going to put these EPRs on there, they're going to do this. They're going to cut down on emissions." That's great. But what was the negative side effects of the EGR? That wasn't clearly stated. And that's the problem with the industry, because nothing is set to an unbiased side. It always leans to one side or the other.
Well, the EPA was set up to make the air cleaner, not to make your motor run longer.
Right.
That's exactly the problem that you're getting. Right.
And so what we're seeing is just what those problems with the EGR alone. But then when you look at the diesel particulate filter itself, you have this filter that's supposed to catch the diesel particulates and get to a certain restriction of flow, and then it goes off into a regeneration cycle. So then you have to have, either you're at a reduced speed or performance, you have to pull off the road or find a spot to regen. If you're if you don't run it long enough, you get to the spot where you can regen, and then you have to sit there for an extended period of time, let your truck run at a high idle while it's still using its EGR. You're using that fuel that's supposed to get you down the road. You're using that as heat to burn off this filter.
Kind of deserves a little clean idle sticker on the side.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, it's clean. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. It's clean in your pockets.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
That's what benefited us with the chemicals. You see, they made our business. See, that's what happened. You know, my background first was racing, and when we started with the racing years before I even got into this, you know, it wasn't into saving fuel, or it was pounding out the, you know, we're putting some nasty fuel or nasty air from that fuel from the racing. But what has evolved is now fuel that we're working with for the industry, or I mean the consuming industry, is that we have to have chemicals that combat this situation and make the fuel, like we were talking, lubricity. The fuel's so dry after they hydrocracked the fuel down to removing the sulfur. That was the first thing they did in October of 93. They lowered that because they wanted to have less NOx into the air, which that helped. But what did they do? They made the fuel so dry that it wore out the cylinders.
Now, did the sulfur add any type of lubricant before it was pulled out of the system?
Sulfur was a form of a lubricant, but the situation was that when they extracted the sulfur out, they said, well, it's still got 15 parts per million. Well, look at mathematically what that is. That means nothing. What that is the reason that what they have as a residual left in the pipeline terminals or in the pipelines, that you're going to pick up some type of sulfur content and it's going to read. So there's no sulfur. There's no real quality lubricant. It's more like running kerosene year round, you know, very dry. Mm-hmm. Two, in the hydrocracking process, they allowed more water to be in the fuel, which created more of a problem for the microbial. Mm-hmm. So we had to address the lubricity. We had to address the microbial. We had to address the combustion. We had to address the cold weather operability issue.
The water. You know?
And we had to get to eliminate the water aspect in some manner. So all these different factors benefited our company in reference to that need. And that's why if you go buy a Duramax at a dealership, when you go buy a brand new truck at a dealership, a GMC or a Chevrolet or whatever with a Duramax, it comes with CleanFire already in it. And that's because they want to have a good quality lubricity agent in the fuel when they take it out and park it. And if that truck has to sit on a lot for a year, year and a half, or whatever the case may be, they have something to protect that fuel delivery system. And that's an easier entity to work with than a truck driver. Because a truck driver come back and say, well, you know what I do is I go out here and I take my used engine oil and I dump it in and lubricate my fuel. And I'll go, what?
What's wrong with that? What could possibly go wrong?
And you know what? But I'm using your chemicals and I'm clogging my filters. And I'm saying, well, sir, you know, the micron size of the filtration system for your oil is not like your fuel delivery system. So you're going to pick up you're putting metals and all this garbage right into your fuel. And then you're wondering why you're taking out your injectors, you'd be amazed. Well, you know, I use the power steering fluid. I use transmission fluid. I use, brake fluid. I mean, we've heard it all.
Well, and then seafoam.
I've never had a problem. And then you talk to them 15 minutes and you find out, well, I've done 2 in frames in the last 6 years. Now here's something that's really important in reference to it. In frames. That's part of business. Rebuilding engines is part of a business. Rebuilding pumps, things like that. Things do wear out. Here's the issue. We don't have parts available in this country anymore. That's the hard part. That's a fact. I built an engine for the boys, and I built an engine for the bus. And I wanted all OEM parts. So I order the parts and everything. I get ready to order parts, and I'm talking to them. They say, well, they're not available. I want to mean they're not available. I can get parts. I'm seeing on the internet. I can get all the pistons I want, rods, anything I want. It's all aftermarket. Well, aftermarket parts, I don't care what you say. Aftermarket parts are not the same as the OEM parts. And so you're waiting 4 months, 6 months, a year for a set of pistons or liners. It's crazy. Can you imagine? We have shops.
That's not acceptable, you know.
Look at this. This is how it's hurting the industry. We have customers that sell a lot of clean fire. And they're shutting some. We actually have some people that have shut down their shop there over in Clearwater. And I asked, what place was packed? They have all the business, very good mechanics and things.
A lot of municipality. Yeah.
Yep. They have the municipality. And I said, well, what's going on? We can't get parts. We got people coming in here parking our trucks and they're complaining that they've got their truck sitting in here for 3 months because we can't get parts for it. They're mad at us and they're making truck payments on this truck.
Oh, yeah.
We can't do anything to it. We can't charge them labor. We've got a parking lot full of trucks, but we can't get parts for the trucks that we need to get. That's a problem.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
So,
well, Travis, it's been an hour already. Time flies when you're having fun. I'm really glad you guys was able to stop in and give us an interview and chat for a while. I always enjoy chatting with you. I know Bill does too.
We're going to have you back
with somebody educated on what they're selling.
Yeah.
Check the boys out if you can over at Clean Fire. And,
sure will.
Give us a call. Yeah. See, find us on Facebook or give us a call and we'll help any way we can explain the what we can help them with.
If you guys decide and want to do a tailored show or something like that on a specific issue on fuel, I'd be more than willing to help you guys out.
Sounds great. We'll try and put a link to you guys on.
Yeah. Our page real quick though, here. plug your website, phone number, whatever it is you want to.
Sure, you can give us a call. The phone number for direct is 407-712-4052. And you can see us at cleanfirefueladditive.com. And that's our website page.
Well, sounds great, fellas. We appreciate you having on. We're going to wrap up a couple things here. So if you want to stick around, you can. If not, we will see you soon sometime.
Thanks for having us.
We enjoyed it.
Well, I'll let Bill roll this last little thing in here and say.
For those of you that are new to the show, we've got a new segment we do towards the end here, which is basically all Steve, his new little thing called My 2 Cents Worth. And it's
My 2 Cents Worth.
It's his 2 Cents Worth. So without a further ado.
Well, thank you, Bill. Thank you. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it. Well, and I could come back. We still have a lot going on as usual. Can I hear you?
A little hot and shut.
I hear you, buddy. Hey, well,
can I hear me?
I hear you. God, well, we still have a lot going on as usual. We got celebrities passing away, and everyone seems to know what they want, even though they're gone. There's numerous money-making internet jobs that are too good to be true. The government is changing laws, thinking they're helping out our people and our country. No one wants to work anymore. If they do, they do it half-assed and shouldn't. And who's the cool word patrol that puts out words that have a made-up meaning and sound so ignorant that makes them sound just as stupid? And finally, we discuss who takes a better knee. And away we go. First off, we had a country music icon pass away this week that I'm sure everyone has heard about. But if you were in a cave this week or no news or social network, we lost Mr. Toby Keith to stomach cancer. He'd been battling it for a couple years. He had numerous songs and hits and was a fighter and believer in this country. He will be truly missed. Your red solo cup. I've seen it everywhere. Seen the empty bar seat with the cup on the bar for him. Now, that being said, I can't believe all the bullshit on social media that people can't just let a man rest in peace. But no, there's all this shit on here about who he wouldn't want at his funeral and trying to sling mud at other country stars. This shit needs to stop. And all you idiots need to grow up and take care of your life while you're still here, like he did. Wasted energy, people. Well, how many of you would like to be rich and not work real hard? And you can do this just a couple days or more a week. That's the phrase for all these ads on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, and any other place you watch shorts or videos. They get you to tap on a link or another video to tell you how to get rich if you only follow their method. There's even videos of people out there saying they did all the investigating for you and talk you into the same bullshit. It would be nice, people, but the way to make money is getting you to view their content. So just beware. Now we have the government, always changing laws to benefit them and not us. This is a subject that is endless, but I will just touch a little bit of it. My concerns are for our hardworking truck drivers out there. They change our tax laws, what we can deduct or not. They change safety regulations that were bad enough to start with. The 50 states that we operate in are all different when it comes to rules and regulations. And even though we were governed and monitored federally by the government, speed limits, weights, permits, size, and dimensions, and that's just a couple off the top of my head. They need to leave things alone and go back to some of the old rules we had, period. Does anyone
from an old truck driver
want to work anymore? Dave is just in, he's in depth. Look at him.
Hell, it
seems,
I don't.
It seems to me people don't want to work at all because there's too many free handouts. The people that do work, and yes, it's a certain age group, do come to work, not on time, do a half-assed job, don't care if they get fired, just go somewhere else and start another one till it happens again. What kind of work ethic was taught to these kids? Obviously none. This one here gets under my skin a little. Can anyone tell me who's ahead of the word patrol? These new so-called cool or edgy words to start to show up on the news headlines, magazines, posts on social media, and it makes me laugh that people think they're hip or in the now. I don't know if those are cool words or not. The one that I'm seeing a lot is woke. Give it a rest, idiots. You're not cool or whatever term you want to use. And finally, Dave,
what happened to Groovy?
My question to you is controversial. Are you ready? Who do you think takes the best knee?
I'm ready.
Colin Kaepernick?
What does that mean?
Tonya Harding or Monica Lewinsky.
Got
that's
an
my
two that
cents.
One.
Have a great week.
Of those names, I think Tonya Harding's the only one with a sex tape. So we can
we Monica can go ahead. Sucked the president's dick.
Yeah, but we don't have that on film, so we can't.
Well, she was on a knee.
She was on both
I knees. See Travis up there laughing under his hand. So who do you think took the best knee, Dave?
First off, I wanna address the elephant in the room, and that is that Steve's views are his own and do in no way reflect those of Three Fat Truckers. And,
yep. Write your complaints to 1-300 Merkel Press.
I really do. I think they do reflect Three Fat Truckers.
Oh, I think they do.
Very good.
I don't agree with most of what he says there.
Oh, well. Kids, this has been a lot of fun. We're going to wrap it up.
Yep.
Yeah, we sure could.
Thanks again for you guys coming along. We really
did. Yeah, gosh, that was fun.
Thanks for having us. We really appreciate it.
I can't use them.
Yep. Dave is still forced. Dave's still 10 seconds in the past. Anyway, we'll be back in 2 weeks, folks.
I was here.
Oh, my God. We'll be back in 2 weeks, folks. Till then, I've been Bill.
And this has been Dave. Hey, thanks, everybody, for stopping by. Have a wonderful week.
Have a good one, folks.